Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome to This Is Your Laugh, the podcast that interviews well-known female stand-ups and comedy actors about what comedy has taught them about life. This podcast is brought to you by Comedy 5050, and we're your hosts, Roxy and Alice.
Our guest today is Lily Brazier, self-professed as having had zero interest in going in front of the camera or seeking out stardom. Her journey to success has been far from traditional. She grew up in Kent, described herself as a rebellious teenager, and said she never knew what she wanted to do. After a degree in media studies at Sussex University, she got a job at an advertising agency and then moved into television production. It was while she was working as a factual filmmaker that her then-boyfriend asked her to appear in a YouTube comedy he was making.
This unwittingly developed into the hit show People Just Do Nothing. After her first ever acting role as the hugely popular character Mish, she proved her innate talent and was given license to create her very own TV show, something most actors and comedians are still yet to achieve after years of grafting in the industry. Her sitcom Wannabe aired in 2018 on BBC Three.
And which Roxy was actually in.
Thank you.
Very good part. Yeah.
And since then, she's been cast in Judd Apatow's feature film Juliet Naked with the likes of Rose Byrne, Ethan Hawke and Chris O'Dowd.
No big deal.
No big deal, guys.
Yeah. No one watched it, so that's fine. So it's not a big deal, actually.
I thought that was your interjection. She was nodding throughout the whole of it. And then
I bloody loved that. It's like, okay, what when you die, what's that called?
What? Oh, your...
Death.
No, your eulogy.
My death. No, it's like a eulogy. CV / eulogy.
Oh, God, was it that somber?
No, it's great.
Why does it feel like a eulogy? Is that rather than a biog?
Because I've given up. Because that's it now. No, that was great. Thanks, sorry.
Oh, it's so right,
really accurate.
I mean, it's an amalgamation of several sources, I suppose.
Wikipedia, mainly.
Yeah. Google.
Just going to say this. Have you ever played the Wikipedia game?
I don't play games.
This is totally free, right? Yeah. We both start on a word, so come up with any word. Say a noun, anything.
Pajama.
Pajama, great.
I think it's like, actually, pajamas.
Pajamas.
Oh, no, it's got an S, not just pajama.
Not
it?
A grammar lesson. Okay, so we start on pajamas.
Yeah.
And then we want to get to the word and we come up with another word. Like, for example, Lily, any old word?
Any word, banana.
Banana. So we go from pajama to banana.
Rhyming.
And
yeah, we're writing a poem as well. That's just the secondary part of the game.
Also writing a poem. And all you can do is click on the hyperlinked words within each page. So say you start on pajama and there's a word in that page that says legs. You might click on legs and then you click on the next one, which is like muscles. And you've got to get your way to banana from pajama. And it's a race. You don't have to click on the same links, the same linked words.
Wow.
You can do different ones.
Okay.
You guys don't think this sounds fun, do you?
I'd rather watch TV. I don't know. Yeah. Sorry. Look out the window. I don't know.
Look out the window.
I like the sky. I don't know.
Sky's fascinating. Yeah.
I haven't played it, but I look forward to one day playing it.
Well, I think you're probably just cool.
No, I think it's not cool if I can't do pajamas. But yeah, I'm in. Thank you.
What do you do to relax? What is your night in with my friends? I'm going to do something. What is it?
Night in is like basically I turn my living room into a massive bed and then we just watch films and eat loads of food.
You still have sleepovers?
Sleepover, exactly.
Oh, that's so nice.
And it's usually with a hangover, maybe. So on a hangover,
you
so you
are
just want
cool.
Comfort. Like, very cool, guys. Binge drinking is very cool. I highly recommend it if you want to be cool. Don't do it. And Yeah, and so that's what I do if I'm staying in or and if I'm going out.
Do you ever, like, watch your own things? Are you like, guys, oh, God, I can't believe this just came on. Oh, that's so awkward.
No, because that's actually my worst nightmare. I just really? Go into, like, full, like, shock mode, like, panic, like, PTSD. Like, oh, my God, I can't look at my face and hear me talking.
Are you one of those people that literally doesn't watch your stuff at all, ever?
I watch it in the edits.
Okay.
But I'll get, like, sent the first edit for something, and then I'll just be, like, almost having to look away the whole time in disgust.
Why? What about it?
I just find myself so unpleasant. I don't know. That sounds really... But I do. Don't cry. It's all right. And
tears and are cascading.
And then I slowly get used to watching it and just accept defeat that I'm a piece of shit, basically. Sorry, no, that's... me. But I'm just not very good at it.
This
what about you?
Can
you watch?
Room.
Can you watch yourselves?
I can watch. I do watch my stuff, as in, and I've also cut together like a show reel. So I feel like the higher up you go, the more you can be allowed not to watch your stuff. But when you're sort of still trying to get your career into shape, you kind of need to watch your stuff.
I
just
mean,
to
I'm
like
still
yeah,
with
make
your
show
reel.
Yeah. I'm absolutely fixated on the lines that appear between my eyebrows, and I would say it's like
the 11.
Oh my God! Yeah.
You and don't have it though.
Not right now because I'm really trying hard. I do this, and it's like it's completely symmetrical. I mean, you could
Why
literally draw a line.
Why is that a bad thing, though?
It's not a bad thing. It's not. Okay, yeah, what is it about it?
You
I'm
love
vain.
It.
I'm really vain.
Yeah, but I think we all are. I think that's why I find it difficult, partly, because in my head I'm like, maybe I'm beautiful. And then I watch it, I'm like, oh, no, I'm horrible.
Oh, it's like a disappointing photo. Like,
yeah.
I had that last night, and I was like, that's not what I thought I looked like.
And I'm also like, maybe I'm not funny either. Like, I don't know, it's just... It's okay. Hard to look at yourself with perspective, isn't it? So you just give up.
I feel like you need to put a mini Roxy Nallis on either of your shoulders who can just whisper, like, your eyelashes are amazing.
Oh, cute.
Your teeth are so straight.
You're very funny.
You're great.
Guys, if you want to hang out ever, come round to the bed.
Ourselves.
Yeah. You're always welcome. But yeah, no, it is. I don't know. It's just hard, isn't it? Because I don't know if I have a very big ego, and I would love to. But
I don't think you do, from what I know of you, actually. So just.
I really struggle with that bit, but one day the confidence.
So what do you do then if you've got to do something really big that you're scared about, or you know, requires a lot of confidence? How do you find that?
It depends what it is, because if it's actually, I have this thing, like, I'm terrified of read-throughs, like sitting around a table reading a script. We all know what it is, but just in case anyone doesn't.
Yeah.
I just really hate that sort of intense, like, sitting in a room and everyone's looking at you and you can't really act. I feel like, to me, I can't, so I'm just reading. And then I had one the other day and then I just couldn't read anymore, and I was just like I couldn't even see the words, and I was just like, sorry, I'm just butchering it, sorry, and just couldn't do it. And I feel like I just can't do that bit. But when you get on set and you're dressed as that person and you're in that place and it's a more, sorry, I'm a dickhead, but it's more like creative, and you're suddenly like in that zone and you've really built on that story and that character, then that's, you don't really need confidence because you go into like another bit of your brain and you stop being yourself.
It's like the dissociation between yourself and the person that you're playing, right?
Yeah. Like, oh my God, that's it. So in the read-through, I'm like half me, half them, and I can't. I'm like stuck in this like horrible half being born, and then by the end, it's fine. It's also a lot of judgment in the read-through, I feel like.
I think there is a sense of that, definitely. But it's weird the way that technically, like, you can't forget to speak. It's like forgetting to breathe. But yet, when we start to overthink it, in like a read-through, I have that thing going, maybe I just won't be able to say the words anymore. And you kind of think, you definitely haven't lost that ability to do that. It's just your mind trying to sabotage your opportunity.
Yeah, the self-saboteur.
Something that I wondered, and probably you wondered as well, is because you have said yourself that People Just Do Nothing sort of came out of the blue.
Yeah.
Does that now mean that you have a more relaxed approach to your career in terms of you're not so set on thinking, where's my next move coming from? You are more still just, I wonder what will happen next? Or have you changed that approach a bit?
Well, you need to make money. Don't you? So that's the problem. I'm quite open, to see what's going to happen. And at the moment, I'm just writing loads of stuff and kind of want to see where it goes. But for a lot of the time when I was doing People Just Do Nothing, I was working another job. So it was only at like series 4, I think, that I stopped working my other job. And then I put everything into doing TV stuff. So that was only like 2.5 years ago.
What job were you doing?
I was doing like filming and editing and directing like little videos for like online stuff. Like,
as if it was your documentary background.
Yeah, so I worked at The Guardian for a bit.
Of course.
Making some really important cooking videos and gardening videos. So very hard hitting, liberal stuff. And I did some like fashion stuff, and I'd like film backstage at Fashion Week and get shouted at by everyone. And that was quite fun. Like, felt really out of place. And then I was like, no, I'm just going to really go for it with TV. And So I just started writing stuff and actually going to auditions because I wasn't working. And I don't know, it's a difficult industry, isn't it? Because it's like you have loads on and then you have nothing. So it's really, I suppose that's just being freelance anyway, but it's just, yeah, at the moment I'm just writing loads of stuff basically and seeing with different people in different places and kind of seeing what happens with it. But I don't have like a career trajectory. I've got like massive imposter syndrome. Like I feel like I'm not me a lot of the time in things.
Yeah.
Because it's so surreal and I sort of feel like I don't.
Not in a sort of schizophrenic way, but do you feel like you have?
Maybe. Undiagnosed,
like,
so far.
Lots of different facets and lots of different sides to your personality, and only certain environments bring out certain qualities.
Definitely, like I'm very like need to be nurtured. I think with performing, I'm at my best when I feel like comfortable and nurtured, and like everyone is on my side. If I feel like under pressure, aka an audition, I'll either go really well because I'm like pumped with adrenaline, or it'll go really badly because I'm pumped with adrenaline and feel like I'm going to pass out. So I definitely, and that's why I really like writing. Because it's like you can go into your head, find all these little characters, feel all their feelings, and without feeling like you've made a dick of yourself, basically.
Yeah. So, there was an actor that said to me, you have to go into an audition as if it's your first day of the job and you've already got it, which I thought was such good advice.
But actually
quite hard to implement, it turns out.
Well, because it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Also, auditions, and I love acting and I love this industry. Thank you. More auditions, please. I put so much into them. Like, you have to learn your lines, obviously. You have to create that character. You have to understand the script. And then I might go in and fuck it up. So it's just, yeah, it's a lot of work.
Talk to me more about this creating the character thing, because I think I often feel like I'm just going up for stuff that's just a slightly different version of me and I just say basically the lines as myself. But do you really do quite a lot of actually changing of who you are? Because it sounds like that when you're talking about the read-through as well, that you were doing physical things to try and become a different character. Is it like you're thinking about how they're different to you psychologically?
I think it's like you're more psychological. I mean, that's probably why you're good though, because you just go in, do it, and you're out in and out.
My CV would say otherwise, but...
we're all at the beginning.
You are both being so modest right now.
Life starts in your 30s.
Well, yeah.
I don't know, I just need to work out who that person is. I don't know, I'm quite an intense freak, so I would just need to really like get into that. Who that person could be, and it could be like someone that I used to be, or someone that I knew at school, or someone that's like a family friend, or someone that I stalk on Instagram. But just like get into that mindset, and to be, it might just come out as the same character every time, so I might not be doing anything different, but in my head I feel
it's
like I am.
Okay, yeah, no, that's interesting.
So then in terms of your approach, if one is a blagger and 10 is an intensely hard worker, where do you think you fare on that scale?
Depends on the day, really.
Interesting.
I'm pretty intense. Like, if I have a project, then that's it. That's all that matters. But if I don't have, like, a deadline, then with writing, I'm just so... Like, I might spend all day procrastinating, and then I'll spend all night writing. I'm just so good at procrastinating.
Oh. Well, I mean, the house has never been cleaner, right? When you've got something that you need to write.
Like... I wish I was that kind of procrastinator.
Oh.
I'm more sort of just like, I'll just organise my drawer of nail varnishes all day. And think about them, and then I'll just buy loads of lava lamps. I did that a few months ago. I was like, lava lamps are cool. I think, yeah, if I've got like a deadline, I work really hard, and if I don't, then I'll berate myself and then work really hard in that way. So I think, but I don't think I'm a blagger because I can't sell myself for love nor money. Like, I can't. So I feel like, I don't know, yeah, I don't know what I am. So I'm really depressed. I might just up it a bit. I'm incredible. I'm a blagger,
yes,
and an intenser.
I mean, come on, you got your own show on. That is,
yeah,
as we said in the intro, that is not easily done.
No, it isn't.
No,
I wish I realised that at the time.
Oh, that's so. Are you having the thing now? Or are you trying to get away other stuff? And you're like, what?
You're so slow.
Yeah, I feel
like Wannabe was a bit of a sort of odd occurrence though, because it was so fast. We did it. We wrote it in like 4 months, which is good learning, but obviously not always great for the final thing, and we shot it so quickly. It was such a quick like beginning and end. You know when you do driving, you learn to drive.
Intensive.
Yes, you're so good at words. Right. It's like an intense
word. I'm very verbose.
That's what people say about you. It's very true. Yeah, it was like an intensive course of learning how to do a series. So it was good and but hard and also,
it's a baptism by fire a bit.
Yeah.
Stop trying to impress her now with your phrases.
Yeah, religious shit.
Gonna shove some idioms in there. So in terms of your writing, me neither. In terms of your writing then, so they say write what you know, which kind of really bugs me actually, because surely there's some scope for imagination. But in terms of that, how much do you think your own life has inspired your writing?
Write what you know is hard because we know so much stuff now. We have so much TV, Instagram, all the other ones. Like, you can really investigate someone's life, and it might only be like a certain side of them, but you're still creating a character by like spying on people, basically. So that's what I love social media
for.
Do
you twitch the curtains at night and kind of have a look at your neighbours?
Yeah. I am a creep. I sit on the bus just like with my headphones in, no music on, just listening. Like,
right. Oh, yeah, that's a great one. Yeah, 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 I do that sometimes.
Is this a thing?
Yeah, if you want to hear a conversation, you just, if something's interesting, I'll turn off my podcast and my music, but then keep the headphones in so people don't know I'm listening. Yeah.
Do you do it when you're scared? Like, I should be wary of that person potentially on the bus. He's just acting a little bit odd.
Never that practical, really. No. Just, more selfish.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
I sort of always want to get involved in that sort of stuff as well.
Do
I'm like,
you?
What's happening? I want to join in. Can I phone the police? Well, I don't do that. But yeah, I'm just quite interested in the drama.
Drama sometimes. Magnet.
Yeah, yeah.
Has your own life inspired your writing?
I think I'm really awkward, and I think that really helps because there's so many awkward moments you can have in life, and I always find them quite funny, so that stuff. And I just think, yeah, just sort of relationships in whatever capacity are always quite interesting, and your friends' lives are interesting, and I don't find my life particularly interesting, but everyone else's I find fascinating. So.
Have you ever got in trouble for taking something from somebody's life and then they've called you out on it?
No, but people think that stuff's about their life when it isn't.
Yes, I've had this.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think I even knew that about you. I don't know what they want. Do they want royalties from that? Or what's the protocol?
Bit of recognition, who knows?
Yeah. Dedicated to someone's. Yes. Yeah. I don't think people know. And also because writing, there's so many drafts and it changes so much that by the time that idea is in use, it's totally different anyway from how it started, I feel like, a lot of the time. So.
Are you doing, at the moment, your projects are with other writers? Are you collaborating a lot? Are you working
I'm doing a couple by myself and then some with basically friends who write as well. So, yeah. But writing by yourself is actually, because you two always write together?
No. Bit of both. Bit of both. Pick a mix.
Yeah. Sweet. That was a pun.
Bit of dib dab, is that what it's called?
You're going to go down a really euphemistic territory here.
Yeah, writing by yourself is quite nice because it's like, well, it's nice and it's not nice, I think, because you can just do whatever the fuck you want, which is good. And it's like
arrange your nail varnishes.
Yes, exactly. And then at 5 a.m, you're just like, I'm doing it now. But also you don't have anyone to sort of bounce it off, which is difficult. But writing with other people sometimes I find annoying because I'm just like, we've already talked about this, it's time to move on, or I'm not getting what they're getting. And it's like, and that's where the good stuff comes, I think, from the battling with each other and the difficult bits. But I don't know.
You have different perceptions of reality.
Yeah.
So your lens through which you see the world might be very different to somebody else's, and it can be jarring, can't it? Sometimes, yeah. Rox. Like with us, we're like, I just don't think that's realistic. And you say, well, actually, I knew somebody who did this, and you know.
Yeah. I think the thing that I've noticed I miss when I don't write with you is I'm not very interested in details, so I sort of won't bother filling them in, and you're very into details. So I read back things I've written and they're just very vague.
A man says something to someone else.
Exactly. We wrote a radio thing recently, and reading back the script, it literally says, you know, oh, can you shut that door? Funny line, comment.
Insert joke in caps.
I do that all the time. I think it's fine. You do the boring part, then you do the funny part, then you make it actually funny. Yeah. Then you hate it and delete it all, and then you do it again. You two are cute, though, aren't you? I like that. You miss each other. How did you meet each other, then?
Oh, hello. It's swapped around.
I'm taking over.
Well, there is actually a good story. We were in an audition, a recall audition at drama school. And we had we got to the kind of like final stages and it was kind of make or break. And they gave us a form and it was like a health form to say, do you have any existing injuries? And, or do you have any sort of body things going on?
At the audition?
Yeah, it's really weird.
It's like the health bit. It's like a ballet school audition or something.
Yeah, it was like, they want to know about like spinal things or something. And I sort of leant over to Roxy, who'd been very smiley and nice and warm that day.
Very out of character.
Hang on, I'm not telling the story I remember.
In years to come. And yeah, because some people, you know, can be quite competitive and those things. Anyway, so I leant over and I sort of said, I've actually got scoliosis, like a wonky spine. I don't know whether I should put it down. And she sort of looked at me and really considered it, sort of weighing up, if I tell her to put it down, then maybe I will have more of a chance statistically to get in.
If
I tell her not to, then I'm probably a better person. And she chose the latter. And we both got in,
and I still
have a wonky spine.
Do you?
I do. What? I should be an inch and a half taller.
But how does it affect your life other than height?
I just see everything horizontally. No.
I was like, let me feel it. Tilt my head.
Do you know what? It doesn't at all, other than reminding me occasionally that I have a nice friendship with a...
That's so gross.
I feel like we should also point out that had you said you did have it, you may well have gotten anyway. It's not like Guildford don't accept people with scoliosis, but I think we both just agreed you could just get in and then tell them afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably a safer way of doing it.
It doesn't impact you in any way. They don't need to know.
Other than at the ballet bar, I'm just slightly skew-if. But,
yeah, but that's,
you know,
your thing. That's what makes you
the wonky.
It's like the wonky dancer.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of straight dancers out there. We need wonky. That's so nice. Very nice meet cute.
Oh, good Lily, look at you being generous and turning it round on
us. Yeah, I hate talking about myself, so let's keep going. Thank you, guys.
Hi guys, Shangela Sepafemu here, telling you to please listen to the Brian and Roger podcast. Now, I don't know who's written it, but whoever it is probably a genius. So I think you should give it a listen because it's such great stuff.
I'm afraid I'm going to turn it back on to you. So the feature film that you were in, which is very impressive to be in a feature film, which is Juliet Naked, which is comes from an adaptation or adaption. I don't know what the word is.
You know words. Come on.
No, go on then. I'm being modest. Of a Nick Hornby book, which actually I went through a real Nick Hornby binge phase when I was, you know, in my early 20s. What was that experience like? Because it's the first film that you've ever done.
It was like the first thing that I'd ever done that I hadn't written. So it's like the first thing I'd audition for.
Wow. And so it's a biggie to get as your first ever.
Yeah, no, it's a bit much. Yeah. And it was it was amazing. It was mad. I just kept saying I'm like a competition winner, which obviously you're not meant to do. You're meant to be like, yeah, I'm the shit, I'm really good. But obviously I was like, I basically won a competition. And they were like, no.
Did you keep saying that on set?
I kept saying it, well, I had to go to New York for this read through. And like obviously I love a read through
at this point.
Well, yeah. I think so. I mean, I could have not got it. I'd only done self tapes, I'd done like 2 or 3 self-tapes.
Yeah.
And then I had to go to New York for a read-through. And then the day before I met up with the producer, one of the producers and the director. And the director is Jesse Perez, who's directed Girls and Glow and like massive stuff. And he lived in this I went to his huge brownstone in Brooklyn.
Of course.
That was my American accent.
I really romanticise all of that.
But in the moment, terrifying. The producer called Barry was there, and Barry worked on Little Miss Sunshine, just so stuff with Wes Anderson, mad stuff. And I was just there to have a chat with them, and I was just dripping with sweat, trying to play it cool, but shitting myself.
What do you do when do you have a backup? Like Roxy puts some talcum powder, dry shampoo in her hands to stop the...
Oh, right, we're literally talking about my sweaty palms. Yep, sure.
If it was just my palms, I wouldn't mind, but it's just everything, my eyelashes.
I've used this on my upper lip before.
Dry shampoo?
It was not dry shampoo, actually. It's called, I can't pronounce the make of this, it's like Schwofsky.
You could get sponsored by them.
Oh yeah, Schwartz. Yeah. We can't say your name.
We can't say the name, but we'll go for
beep.
It. Schwartzkopf, is that how I say it? So they've done something called powder for your hair. And I was in a casting once with an actor before we were about to go in, and I saw her put some on her hands, and I was like, "What is that?" And
I'm writing it down in my notes.
It's for my sweaty palms. And I was like, "Hello, please can I have some?" And I've never looked back.
In years to come, we'll find out how incredibly toxic it is.
Well, do you know what's funny? So I used it for an entire run of Edinburgh last year, and I did. I used it on my upper lip because it sweated, and then by the end of the month, I actually had a skin disease on my upper lip. It was so dry. So I wouldn't recommend it for all body parts. It is meant to be for the hair.
Also, maybe it's okay to sweat.
Robust.
I'm reclaiming sweating.
Yeah,
I
screw
think
it.
It's cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Very cool to sweat.
So did you meet Judd Apatow then?
No, he was more of a sort of...
shadow.
Yeah, exec producer sort of vibe, I think. Mm. But it was mad because I love Judd Apatow films, obviously. Mm. And I love Girls. So it was amazing to be in a room with those people. But obviously I was just this... weirdo. And I did the read through in New York then, so that was very intimidating because it was Rose Byrne, Ethan Hawke, Chris O'Dowd.
Wow. And you played Rose's sister.
Rose's lesbian sister, yeah.
Oh.
it's not relevant, but it's the character trait.
That
I had.
Yeah, I want to watch this now. I'm annoyed that I haven't.
All my hair cut off and dyed pink for it.
Oh,
so.
Wow!
And there was a little boy called Ashy Robertson, who was amazing. And I was like, well, I've got to be better than him. He's only 8. And then we were doing it, and I was like, oh, right. Oh, dear. And there was, you know, you have the people in Read Through who read in like the male and the female parts or whatever. And
no, actually, what do you mean? Sorry, I disagreed, but I don't know.
You know, you have
you
like
the characters.
Sort of cool, yeah, you have like your cool cast, your car cast.
Right.
And then for like the other sort of.
Oh, bus driver number one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I often get brought in to read five characters.
Exactly, because she's a fucking read through queen.
Oh, well.
Exactly.
Wish it converted to parts on screen.
Can
but
you
yeah.
give me some training on it? I would need it.
No, talk to the word girl over here.
Okay. Come on, let's do an intensive course on read throughs. And then, so the person reading in like the male small parts was. From Girls, he was played.
Oh, don't say Adam.
No, I wish. No, oh. Sorry. This guy's amazing too.
Oh,
he plays. What's her name? Marnie's husband with the guitar.
Oh God, him. He's great.
And
I don't
sat
know
next
name.
To him, and he was. And like, he was Rose by one side, and he's reading the bit parts.
See, that makes me feel better about the fact I read the bit
yeah.
parts.
And yeah. he's obviously, and he's done like he was doing. I was like, oh, what have you been up to? Like awkward trying to, and he's like, yeah, I just did a Marvel film, and I was like, cool. He's like, what do you do? I was like, I don't really know. And it was just.
Was he in the film in the end?
No, no. He was just. He's just friends with the director with Jesse.
Right, got you.
And Jesse, like everyone that worked in it, was so nice, and Jesse is really like nurturing and sort of. Gives you space to like improvise, and I feel like really accepted my inability to be a human. So he was like a really, really amazing person to work with, and all the producers were. So thank you for your patience.
Do you got improv in it then?
Yeah, we did. We got to do, yeah, which is good because that's the sort of thing that I love.
Yeah, you're in the element when you do
yeah,
that. Yeah,
that's the sort of shit that is almost like more fun than the lines in a way. It's yeah. like get rid of the lines yeah. and then let's just make some stuff up because it's like I think that's when thinking of the psychology of a character or whatever is good because you just sort of know what they're going to say and you're just using someone else's brain.
Lily, are there any elements of your character, no, of your career that have changed you as a person in terms of your kind of personality and your characteristics?
I think it's made me more sort of in tune with who I am, if that makes sense, because when you write characters, they always have... I just sort of didn't realise they have elements of you in them. So, like, Mish, for example, is, like, really intense.
Yeah.
About, and she gets obsessed with stuff. And obviously, the lava lamp thing, I'm like that too. And I kind of didn't realise how I'm a very intense person. Like, I'm exhausting sometimes. But she's, like, the next level. And I feel like if I let myself be that intense, I could be Mish and have, like, a wall covered in... lava lamp pictures.
Oh, so she's a healthy reminder to you to rein it in a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she lets me express that.
Yeah.
And I suppose like acting and being thrown into these sort of odd situations that when you're not part of that world seems so far away and so big and like this huge thing that you're going to, when you reach it, everything's going to be great. And then when you do reach, not that I've reached like, I haven't got that far, but
you're very successful.
Well, no, I'd say I'm a Z-list. I'm on the list. I'm on the Z.
She's on the list.
I'm on the list, guys. I'm at Z. I don't know. It's changed what I think is important. I think success is basically about being creative and fulfilling your creative needs. Sorry to say that, but
no,
I do think it's
true.
All about creativity and expressing yourself.
So I think it's a really interesting one because I was going to ask you a question along this vein of think about the success is it's not the success in itself, you could argue, but it's the idea that it allows you to then make the work that you want to make because. So fame is like one of the main things, central themes of Wannabe, right? And it's quite a negative view of it. It's kind of the downside of the industry. How do you manage that double-edged sword of the fact that you're not in it for the fame, but actually it's about if you didn't have those followers, then the BBC don't commission the show, which you're the lead in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So how do you sort of negate that in your mind?
So insightful. I love that. And I honestly don't have an answer. Like I find fame like a bit, I'm obviously obsessed with it because Misha's obsessed with it and I've done it and Wannabe and everything I write ends up being something to do with that.
Mm.
But I think it's just because when I was younger, you're sold this thing and you're like, it's amazing and I want to be Kylie Minogue or whatever. And then you get old. And then when you have a bit of access to it, you're like, oh, it's actually quite horrible. Like it's not, it's positive, like you said, in some ways, because you can create the work you want to create. But actually people don't see you as a person. And I'm not talking about me. I'm not Mariah Carey, but like people that are more famous, like, you suddenly become this object and you're sort of controlled and you don't have that freedom. And when you're fans of something, like I include myself in this, it's almost like a crush. Like you sort of create this version of a person, but it's not really who they are. So just a bit, it's quite unhealthy. It's like worshipping. It's like religion in another sort of way of doing it. And I just find it a bit odd. Like I don't, like social media scares me. I've got Instagram, but I only got it like about a month ago.
Oh, really? Really? Oh, gosh, do you feel a pressure there to sort of...
Well, I did. I have recently. I'm saying like, shit, I should have got it years ago just so that I
could
don't
put
know.
My bum on... Yeah. My bum on a beach with no stretch marks or cellulite.
Yeah, because I could face tune the shit out of it. But I haven't posted anything yet because I'm like, what are you meant to post?
Oh, what is it? It's your blank account.
Yeah. And I've got, baby, she got followers though, so don't worry.
I bet you have, but you're blue ticked already.
Yeah, big time. No, I've only got like, I don't know, 70 followers.
100,000 million.
No, nowhere near that. But yeah, it's just, I find it all really odd and I don't, I'm also obsessed with like the truth and things being real. And I feel like that's the problem because... It's all bollocks. Like Instagram, when you see it, you're like, but I know you're not there now. I'm with you. You're not walking on the beach. You're at home watching TV on my floor bed. Like, it's just, I'm a freak. Sorry.
No, I think that's exactly it. And I think the thing about things being real is just, I mean, this comes back to this conundrum about how much do you fake confidence versus how much do you just let people into how you're actually feeling? Because I think in this industry, it's so hard to find that line of being genuine, but also, well, like you said, selling yourself.
It's so true. Because you want to be, I think like the older I get, the more I just want to be like, oh, my authentic self. But I really do. I don't want to put on these fronts and pretend, but sometimes you do have to.
Yeah.
And I can't anymore.
When did you feel like you found out who your authentic self was, or do you think you're still on a journey to find out who that person is? And I suppose also it's constantly evolving, obviously, as well. But was there a moment when you suddenly realised, oh, I think I know who I am now?
Yeah, I think more like probably quite recently in the last sort of year, I've done, you know, a bit of soul searching. Mm. And I just feel, and I sort of like got in tune with who I am a bit more and what actually interests me. And
did you go to Thailand and get a tattoo? Yeah. A little dolphin on your shoulder.
I've actually got a tribal sleeve now. And I found myself written on it. And
this is not accurate for those, isn't it?
Yeah, well, not yet. I don't know. Yeah, I just try and think a bit more. I don't know if it's like part of getting older. I don't know, in the past I'd watch like binge watch TV constantly. I'd like constantly be like watching something or like listening to something, and now I quite like, I really hate myself right now, but like just sitting in silence and having a think.
Mm. Looking out the window, you were telling the truth. It's funny because I always feel bad because actually sometimes I don't listen to podcasts and I don't listen to music, and I do just like walk down the street not doing anything.
Yeah.
And I always think this is so weird. Like everyone else uses this time so much more effectively, or at least they listen to music, at least they're having leisure. Like why would you just be doing nothing?
Because we're observing everything. Mm. I think there's so much to look at, like when you're on the train, when you're on the street. I'm such a looker. Like I'm always looking, and people probably hate that and like, well, you creep. But I just, it's so interesting seeing how people interact and what they're doing and what they're wearing and like how loud they're being or how quiet they're. I don't know, I just find it all so fascinating.
I think, you know, to be as aware as you can in a kind of sensory way, like, and be really kind of permeable to everything that's around you, is going to make you more creative and more clear in what you think about the world and what's going on around you. And it is scary not to do the whole technology is killing us years and years kind of,
oh my God.
You know, so it's probably good that you walk down the street and you listen to the road traffic. And
I think I'm just trapped inside my own head with my own thoughts. I don't think I'm being observant.
Yeah, but that's good. I think that's good as well. I do think it's good to not always be distracted. I love to think. I don't know. I feel like when I'm looking at my phone or listening to music or a podcast, it's like because I feel really anxious and like, and I sort of want to break out of that feeling and just like walk down the street. And it's quite nice like talking to people. I don't know, just talking to people, strangers. I don't just go up to people and talk to them. But say if someone like asks you for directions, it's nice to have a little like interaction. And like London's such a like, there's so many people here, but no one, sorry, such cliche, but no one's speaking to each other. You're not interacting. And it's so frustrating.
I mean, a man smiled at me the other day when I walked past the street, and I immediately just thought, whoa, you what's pervert. Wrong? And then I was like, oh no, he's just smiled back. Like, I mean, but that is not normal for that to be the first response, is it? I find that so weird.
Because in other countries, it isn't like that. You walk, like, I was in Spain recently, guys, so I did go travelling. Yeah.
Oh,
I did find myself.
Did you actually?
But everyone looks at each other. And at first I was like, what? And then I was like, this is great. You're all just looking. We're just animals, like, having a look.
I just thought, why
don't we do that?
Yeah. And they stand closer as well. We give each other quite a lot of distance here. I've noticed that. It's a European thing about, like, getting a bit closer.
Yeah. And just like, I don't know, it's just more relaxed. I feel like a nudge, like, sorry, can I just talk to you very quickly? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. The only time you speak to people on the tube is to say, can you move down, please?
Yeah. Passive-aggressive whining coming from within the carriage.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, I don't even want to say it, so I'll just be really squished for the whole journey instead.
I want to know how you personally achieve work-life balance.
Dream, believe, achieve. I think, I don't know, I just feel like your work should be your life. I've
like, you don't have the balance. I feel like if you're stacking shelves in Sainsbury's, I'm not sure I'd want to take that home.
Sorry, no, because we get to work, work in like a creative industry, I feel like you don't really have that.
Right, in specifically in like artistic fields, like
you
more
meant
of a vocation.
In the past.
Well, I suppose in terms of how do you find the balance of if you're finding work is incredibly stressful, or there is sometimes a certain level of anxiety that comes with working at a certain level and having to be really good as well. How do you find ways to relax, and how do you get perspective if you even do get into that headspace of sort
therapy
of feeling...
guys, therapy's good.
Tell me how you're feeling.
That's one. I don't know, just don't take it too seriously.
Right.
I mean, other than the fact that you need money to survive, I guess, like I said before, I don't have any goals I'm aiming for. I'm just like creating things I want to create and hoping that something will come from it. It's not a great 5-year plan, but
I think it might be. I'm beginning to come around to this way, actually. There's no sort of like concrete disappointment then when you don't get the things that you set out to do.
You don't always know what things are out there as well. You don't know. It's better to just be open-minded and just don't take things too seriously, because I've definitely gone through phases of being like, oh my God, it's so important to do this thing. But
it's hard not to think that when you've got the chance to do your own show, for instance. Yeah. The stakes are high there, as in, but still not so high that you didn't manage to go, okay, I can still not lose perspective on this. Is that right?
I think a lot of the industry is about rejection, isn't it? So I feel like you just have to get used to being rejected all the time.
I love how much you beamed as you said rejection. You're just grinning.
Rejection, guys. I don't know, once you've been rejected so much, you're just sort of like, well, it doesn't really... I don't know, you get more perspective in a way, because that thing you're so scared of has happened, and then you just have to carry on, and there's so many other opportunities. And I think, especially being females in comedy at the moment, I feel like it's hopefully an exciting time for us.
Definitely.
But, brilliant. Well, on that, we will ask you our final question that we ask all of our interviewees.
Drum roll, please.
If there is one thing that comedy has taught you about life, what is it?
Oh, shit.
Such an anticlimax.
Oh, shit. Brilliantly dropped.
Oh, shit. Well, it's the same sort of thing, like, don't take life too seriously. And also, comedy is quite good because you communicate, like, really big ideas or, like, really difficult things, but in a light-hearted way. So it's quite a good way of sort of slowly getting a message across to someone, I feel like, if you know what I mean. If you say it in a funny way, then people are almost more receptive than if you just sort of tell them. It's a way of expressing yourself, which is a bit more... It's for the other person, it's for everyone as well. It's not selfish. You want to make everyone feel involved and sort of... It's a nice way of connecting with people.
Yeah.
And I don't... I'm quite thick. I don't know. You guys
You
know.
Are far from that. No, you've so given us a lot. That is... four take homes we'll get from that.
What are they? What? What
just bullet point
perspective.
Oh yes, perspective.
Yeah. Making light of life.
Yeah.
Discussing big themes.
Mm-hmm.
And
tell people how you really feel about the annoying things they do by joking.
Yeah.
Great. Brilliant. I might be a philosopher. One day.
You are. You're a philosopher. And you're a wonderful human being, Lily. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
greatbigowl.com.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.